Yes, I've done a lot of retreats here actually, and Mahashradhar, when he found out how many, he said, "What's wrong with you? Why do you keep needing to come on retreat? Doesn't it go in?" And it doesn't go in, really. This is probably the third talk on renunciation I've given to the order over the years. And what's wrong with you? this may be the last. I was woken up this morning by my yidam. And it's not very often this happens, but I didn't sleep very well last night. And it's a verse of Milarepa. The words came floating into my head. Some of you may know this. Fine jewels and a lovely sweetheart can be left behind if needed, but a warm bed is indeed hard to give up. Maybe that is one of the last things that goes. So this, the kind of provisional title for this has been two challenges, or a double challenge and a warning. On hearing the title of the weekend, I was struck by the title. At least I thought this was the title of the weekend, The Joy of Renunciation. Joy. Is this how we see it? I mean, to be honest, is this how we see it? My impression is that many of us groan when the word renunciation is used. Maybe we think, yes, it's quite noble to do that, but there's a kind of groaning, there's a mixed kind of response to it. Maybe we see it as the end of joy rather than the beginning of joy. And I think when I look at what I've given up in my life, let me take just a very mundane example, smoking. I wanted to give up smoking. I was a heavy smoker. And there was no kind of, I didn't give it up on the basis of pleasure. I gave it up on the basis of kind of suffering in a way. So along the process of renunciation, it was hard. It was really hard to give up. Sometimes I thought to myself, I should be free to smoke, you know, as if smoking is a kind of freedom. But then I reached a point along the process where I'd relinquished it. I kind of let it go. The relief came. But it wasn't until that point I experienced that. So I think when we give up things, the process of renunciation, there's a kind of the effort where there may not be very much pleasure, but there's faith. There's a kind of faith in the idea that there is something kind of beyond what it is you're trying to give up. And then at some point you may be startled by the joy of being free from that. I think of renunciation as going beyond oneself and letting go of those things that prevent this. So like Manjivaja said yesterday, it's freedom from bondage. Like carrying around with you a really, really heavy stone, a really heavy kind of weight, and you don't want to put it down. You can't believe it would be better to put it down. And when you do put it down, there's a kind of relief. So I think for renunciation to happen, to let go of something, to really let go of it, we need to find something that is more satisfying and meaningful, don't we? Maybe we need a new word than renunciation. Many of us have moved away from the earlier, more traditional FWBO lifestyles of community and team-based right livelihood. And an increasing number of order members are not moving towards brahmacharya and the anagarika life, but are moving in what seems like the opposite direction, married life and fatherhood. Now, this may not seem to provide much scope for renunciation, but maybe we need to look at this a bit more closely. I think whatever lifestyle we follow, we need to be going beyond ourselves. But I think it's vital not to think of brahmacharya as being where the renunciation happens. And if you're not moving towards that, it doesn't apply to you. It applies to us all. We're all seeking to abandon bondage. If you do get involved in family life after being ordained, aren't you actually making your life more turbulent and complex rather than developing stillness and simplicity? So why are some of us doing this? Is it we no longer find, or perhaps haven't found for a while, emotional satisfaction in what we're doing? Is it that we're just growing older? Is it just one of those things that is going to happen? Or do we need to look at where we get emotional satisfaction from? Find out where our heart is. I think probably the why question isn't very helpful because I think it's a useful one to ask yourself. But sometimes we don't know why we're doing something, do we? I was asking somebody yesterday why they want to kind of get married, and it's difficult to say why. So maybe a better question is how. How are you going to maintain your practice if you change your lifestyle? How are you going to maintain it? If, on the other hand, we are living the single life, is our life becoming stiller and more simple? Or have we just created a reasonably comfortable niche for ourselves? Actually, if you look at family life, you'll be giving up quite a lot. That precious commodity, time, that we seem to have not enough of ever. In family life, your time becomes squeezed. If you become a father, you will have to consider the whole notion of your space and your time. You'll need to perhaps give up some of your interests, even some of your dreams. You'll have to contribute more in terms of sharing your resources. You want something, but your child needs something. You have to take somebody else into account. You just have to. Your meditation practice will probably take a knock. When will you do it? Very early in the morning, before everyone is up, before the children are awake. Children wake up early. Or late at night when they're finally in bed and you're tired. What about getting on retreat? Will that be possible? So you make many sacrifices. Perhaps after years of just having to take yourself into account, suddenly you really have to take others into account. You have to. Somehow living in the community didn't quite reach this level. But is this renunciation? I think when I consider renunciation, I usually think of it as the opposite of living the family life. But I also remember Bhante warning single men that for us, the great danger is selfishness. The responsible parent will put aside what he wants to do what his child needs to do, or his family. Do we do this enough in our communities? And how do we do it? I think in a good community, this does happen to some extent, but not to the same extent, generally speaking. Has life in the community become just a convenient arrangement for some of us? How well do we know the men living in the community, even after years of living with them? Do we spend most of our time in our room with our laptop and the door shut? I think this is happening more and more in communities, isn't it? Are our hearts in our communities? Because if they're not, who can blame some of us for looking elsewhere? I think as a community, we need to look at our community life as a spiritual community. We need to learn from our successes. And if you look, there are successes. There are successful communities where there's real heart. I love living in my community, and I want others to have the same opportunity. But I've also seen some quite dysfunctional communities, some communities that don't work. So renunciation issues a challenge to all of us, both those in family situations and those who are not. How are we both going to keep our practice alive? Family life may severely limit your opportunities to practice. A friend of mine recently, somebody I ordained, is thinking of having a child. And I said, have you considered the changes this will make to your life? He said, I don't think it will make any changes. And I'm kind of thinking, well, what kind of parent are you going to be? It will make a difference. If you're single, actually, it will make a difference, but it can be done, and you see examples of this. You see examples of people with families who are practicing the Dharma wholeheartedly. It can be done, but can you do it? If you're single, we may have more opportunities to practice, but do we make the most of them? A friend who has recently become a father. This is Velasavatra. And I should mention, he's delighted to be a dad. He loves being dad. He's such a good dad. And told me that he really misses the opportunities he had for practice while living in the community. Oh, it got me thinking about all the opportunities I have for meditation, for Dharma study, for reflection, for discussing the Dharma with my spiritual friends, for hanging out with my spiritual friends. And do I make the most of that? Do I make the most of that? Well, the answer is no. I don't make the most of that. It's so easy to grow complacent. If we choose not to have a family, we need to make sure there is something in our life that demands something from us, something bigger than us. The risk is, if we don't do that, we never fully mature. What a tragedy. I think whether living a family life or living the single life, we need to ask ourselves whether we are growing less selfish. Or is our spiritual life a kind of refined selfishness? Are we more generous? Because this is the positive side for me of renunciation. Giving helps you to give. If we live in cities, and that is where the people are who need to hear the Dhamma, then it will be a challenge to work out how to simplify your life. All order members take the positive precept, with stillness, simplicity and contentment, I purify my body. And these positive precepts we're told at ordination, at the moment of our private ordination, we're told that these positive precepts, they embody the spirit of the Dhamma. But how are we to do this? How are we to simplify our life? One area that we all have to address is distraction. Our lives might be much simpler if we were less distracted. I'd like to suggest that for a growing number of us, this includes the realm of technology. Subhuti was saying recently in Cambridge that he's taken a vow of techno-brahmacharya. Not a traditional term. Don't know what the Pali is for the techno. And in comparison, he says, brahmacharya, ordinary brahmacharya, was easy. My impression, he was saying this kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I think he was making a serious point. I think this points to a growing area of concern. How much time are we involved with our computers, our iPods, our iPhones, our mobiles, and other technological gadgets that I don't even know about? But some of you will. Manjivadra was talking about this mobile phone wildfire or something. Mm-hmm. Getting obsessed about that, but he's gone beyond that, we heard. How much time do we invest in researching the latest developments? Amlavadra was telling me that he was completely obsessing over a mobile phone a while ago. And how much time do we spend on this? Don't worry, Amlavadra, most of us are in the same boat. How many hours do we spend installing that time-saving software? And how much time do we spend, some of us, those lucky ones, talking about the endless merits of Apple over PCs and so on? How much time are we surfing the web? How much of that is born of restlessness and distraction in the room, on your own, with the door closed? Bhante has said, lacking fulfillment, the mind roams in search of deeper emotional satisfaction. Or in an attempt to hide from an unwanted emotional experience. Mental distraction can be seen as a compensatory activity, an unconscious protest at one's lack of emotional involvement. A while ago in my chapter, we looked at how many hours we spent on our computers during the week. It was revealing. I'm not going to reveal it to you, but it was revealing. And I suggest that this is something you could do at home. Of course, sometimes you have little choice because your livelihood is tied up with using a computer. But how much time do we spend on our computers outside work? Me. When I come home from work, I find myself find myself, automatically switching my laptop on. It's like having a companion in the room. I used to spend a lot of time reading. Now I can spend a lot of time on the web. BBC iPlayer, there's a lot of quality TV on that. Some of it is quite useful. I mean, the web is a fantastic resource, isn't it? But it can also be hugely distracting. Time changes, our perception of time changes. It can certainly serve the Dharma, new technology. I've no doubt of that, but it can also mask some deeper unhappiness when you're spending a lot of time on your computer. It's an entertainment centre too, isn't it? We can watch films, we can watch documentaries, we can watch video sangha. I'm surprised, just a little by the by, I'm not surprised that some audio members do download stuff illegally. And you can rationalise that, but it's stealing, isn't it? It's taking and not giving, it's stealing. Because we do all this in the privacy of our rooms, it can blur the ethical dimension. And then there is internet porn. I don't know whether that's the first time in this auspicious room that has been mentioned. In Cambridge, I've already done this. I've already given lots of statistics, which I have no time for this morning. But I'll just give you one. A free porn site in America in 3 months had 12 billion hits. There are 6 billion people on the planet. So either lots of people are taking that kind of free offer up. I think internet porn is something we need to talk about in the order and not get moralistic about, but is that, if you spend a lot of time doing that, is that indicating a lack of emotional involvement, alienation, unhappiness? You know, are we unhappy? Is that why we're doing it? Maybe we can talk about this in our groups afterwards. Nobody goes to any groups. When I moved into my first community in 1985, we didn't have a TV. I cannot remember a community with a TV in those days. There were no mobile phones. There were no computers. No web to surf. Can you imagine that? No web to surf. So what did we do? And I was taxing my mind. What did we do, you know, in the evenings? We talked to one another. That's right. We spent time with each other. We read, we studied. We got an old record player that we used to play. We'd only got Bach, a box of St. John's Passion. Lovely, actually, really lovely. Sometimes we even did poojas together. Some evenings. And then there were classes we supported. I think I may have supported every class at our small centre in Bristol. How life has changed. It feels like living in another age. Life didn't back then seem so simple. But in retrospect, it was much simpler. Much simpler. There's a text where the Buddha says that if there was another desire as strong as the desire of man for woman, make the necessary adjustments, the spiritual life would be impossible. I can imagine the Buddha rephrasing that these days. We may be able to give up sex. For some of us, that is harder. For some, it is easier. But what about techno-lust? Unlike sexual desire, this doesn't seem to diminish with age. So I think it is something that we need to be aware of. No Buddhist has had to deal with this before, this kind of new technology. Some of us remember a time before its onslaught, but more and more people have been born into it. You put the kids in front of the TV, don't you? And they play that video again and again and again. A Buddhist writer, Loy, who wrote Money, Sex, War and Karma. Anybody read the book? It's very, very good, actually. Has something to say about this, and this is taken from a review by Nagapriya. Don't be put off the book by the rather sensational title, by the way. He says, in consciousness commodified, which is a chapter of the book, Loy argues that in the present age, it is not attachment that is the problem, but rather distraction. Our attention has become a precious commodity which all kinds of agencies compete for. This leads to a fragmentation of attention, which results in having less time to give to what is most crucial in our lives. As soon as we begin to focus on something important, we are distracted by an advert, our mobile phone, or an internet message. The degradation of our ability to attend struck me as an especially serious issue. The overwhelming range of choices that we have to negotiate every day entails that living simply can be extremely difficult to achieve. Having less time to give to what is most crucial in our lives. So if we are having a discussion about renunciation, we mustn't see it just in terms of moving away from sex, but moving away from distraction. Although I take the point that sex is the kind of paradigm for that. Moving away from distraction, especially as represented today by technology. Joy comes from a moving away from craving and aversion and by a gradual unification of consciousness. If our attention is seen as a commodity competed for by the forces of corporate consumerism to be divided and fragmented, then we need to particularly be aware of the effect this may be having on us. The modern world is more and more complex and more alienating. The technological advancements that have been made are very impressive. They can give, can't they, an impression of progress, but do they embody ethical values? Technology can be a useful tool, but do we always know when we are using it and when it is using us? Yes, indeed, living simply today can be extremely difficult to achieve. Thank you.